This is an RNIB Connect Radio podcast.
Time again here on RNIB Connect Radio for our weekly update on what's been happening around the RNIB and, of course, news and topics relating to life as a blind or partially sighted person. As our Chief Executive, Matt Stringer, is currently on leave, I have three people taking his place and joining me today. David Newbold, who's the Director of our Office of our Chief Executive. I have Dr. Louise Gao, who is our Senior Clinical Lead on Eye Health, and also Aidan Ford, who is our Director of Technology. Hello and welcome to RNIB Connect Radio, Louise, Aidan and David.
Great to be here. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for having me, Toby.
Great to be here, Toby.
Louise, I think we should start this week with eye care, as there's been a lot going on this week, not only with news about the NHS hidden waiting list, which many blind and partially sighted people are not included in, with obviously their repeat and ongoing eye clinic appointments that don't seem to be showing up in the published NHS waiting list figures. So there is more pressure on the government to develop a national eye care plan for England, isn't there?
There really is, and it illustrates the need for that plan because we simply don't know how many people are on these hidden lists. We know, and as a clinician, I know of patients that have been asked to come back for a follow-up in a month or 2 months or an injection in 2 months, and their appointment comes through for 3-4 months, sometimes 6 months' time. And I know it's terribly difficult for the consultants as well, because they want their patients to come back when they need to come back. If we don't have an ability to monitor that, then we don't know who is missing out on appointments. We also don't know the longer term impact on the person's eye health and the prognosis. So what damage is that doing in the meantime while someone is waiting? It is a significant concern, to say the least.
And we know that obviously eye care, you know, sort of affects a lot of people. And, you know, that also has an impact on the health service and everything else. And if you sort somebody's eyes out, it's going to stop them from sort of tripping over and falling and breaking and stuff. So it is very important to get these figures on the NHS waiting list, isn't it?
Absolutely. It's not just about the eye, it's about the impact that unnecessary sight loss causes for the individual and obviously for society. So if people are more prone to falling, they're more prone to injuries in the kitchen, they're less able to be independent. And I think it's really important that where you can prevent sight loss, that we as a country, as the UK, are doing everything we possibly can to prevent sight loss. And one of those factors is ensuring that people get treatment when they need treatment. They're monitored so that subtle changes, for instance, in a glaucoma case, are picked up before that translates into sight loss. So if you are monitoring a glaucoma patient every 6 months, for instance, and that appointment spreads to a year rather than 6 months, there can be lost vision that you could have avoided if that person had been seen at their 6 month appointment as it should have been. And as you quite rightly say, that can then later on cause people to fall and to injure themselves. It can affect their careers and their jobs. So we want to do everything we can to ensure that eye care policy in the UK reflects that and people do get access to the care that they deserve.
And we recently had the launch of the low vision framework. Why is this important and why does low vision services matter?
So we've known for a very long time, nearly 20 years, that low vision services are patchy in the UK, that not everyone has access to low vision services. And where they do have access to low vision services, sometimes it's just getting a magnifier from a practitioner. And sometimes it can be links with all sorts of other services. It can be optical and non-optical support. It can be integrated with rehabilitation. So there's a huge variety of the levels of care that someone might expect depending on their postcode. When low vision is done well, it can really support someone to live independently. It can link them with all sorts of other services that they might otherwise find accidentally. And it's a way of ensuring that every person who is living with a sight impairment is able to access the support that they need. So what we've done as an organisation is we've looked at why it is that low vision services are so patchy. And that's because there really isn't a framework for commissioners to commission services against. They don't necessarily know what they should be commissioning. And what we've done is we've gone across the sector, we've worked throughout the UK, we've worked extensively with people with lived experience. So that was our first starting point. We did 15 interviews with people with lived experience to say, what were your experiences of low vision? What do you expect from low vision? What would you like from low vision? What's a good low vision service? And then we went across the sector to voluntary organisations, to practitioners, to hospitals, universities, and we asked very similar questions. What does good look like? And we formed a framework that hopefully we can get embedded into the eye care support pathway, into clinical care pathways, for commissioners to know what they should be commissioning and make sure that providers can audit their services against that framework so they know that they're providing a good level of care. And where you receive good level of low vision services, hopefully we will start to prevent people from falling and we will start to enable people to cook because they have the adaptations to their home and their home environment, their work environment, to enable them to do what they need to do, what they need to do, and also what they want to do. So improving quality of life along the way too.
And technology plays a key role in everybody's life as blind and partially sighted people. Aidan, there was an amazing AI event at our London office, the Grimaldi Building, a few days ago, which is really great to hear how AI will be hopefully helping to transform accessibility and maybe put an end to those very inaccessible websites, perhaps.
Yeah, thanks, Toby. So yeah, an absolutely fantastic event and one that I think everybody who came along and fed back definitely enjoyed. Lots of great conversation around how RNIB want to be helping create a more equitable world for blind and partially sighted people when it comes to AI and making sure that the technology can be used for everybody. And I think it could have lots of benefits when it comes to accessibility. And we're really excited to see where things go. The technology is relatively new. You know, OpenAI kind of developed the ChatGPT sort of engine and released that in November 22. And obviously, since then, things have developed a lot. Microsoft have invested a lot into that product too. And I think what we need to remember is that this AI space is just going to keep evolving. So the technologies that we are using right now are the worst that these technologies are ever going to be. They're only ever going to get better from this point forward. So all of the benefits that we're seeing right now are only going to get amplified as time goes on. But RNIB play a really critical role to ensure that we can make sure that accessibility is front of mind of all the software companies as they're developing these tools moving forward.
And is there sort of one example of how that AI is actually able to help people? And I know it's on my smartphone, I have various apps that are using AI to give me descriptions of images and scenes and things like that. Is that the sort of thing you're talking about?
Yeah, exactly. So a couple of examples would be the Be My Eyes app, which is being developed around using the AI tooling. So for example, if you were to use a camera on a smartphone, you'd have the ability to take a picture and for the AI to understand the environment that you're in and provide that context and that description. So for example, if I was to take a picture of my desk right now, it would tell me that there's a keyboard with a screen and a laptop, etc., and that I'm on this call right now. So there is that ability. But then there's also other things in terms of more workplace type enhancements, which would be, and to be fair, these are for everybody, but making, you know, life's easier for everybody is something that AI can do. And if we think about accessing information and being able to create accessible documentation, etc., being able to ask a Microsoft Copilot type AI tool that would go and find the information for you rather than having to go and search through a wealth of other information and getting lost around the myriad of information that might be available. Again, just surfacing that information through text-based inputs and outputs really makes that information ultra accessible. So there's so many different streams that are ongoing. And we also got to see many at the event as well, in which people demonstrated and showcased the kind of tools and things that are available. So the one that stood out in my mind, for example, was Christopher Patino, who is the head of accessibility and disability inclusion at Google, shared a really impactful video where it showed a runner who had sight loss, who was running down a road unaided for the first time because he was using a camera which was able to assess the scene in which he was running, you know, the road that he was running down, and was able to work out where the middle of the road was and guide him to make that run. And the gentleman in the video got quite emotional afterwards because it was the first time he'd ever been able to run freely. And again, it just showed the power that AI can have on all different parts of people's life. So it doesn't have to be the more technical elements. It can be enabling in other areas of life too.
Wow, it sounds amazing. And I don't know whether much AI might be coming up next week, David, because the RNIB in Northern Ireland have their tech fair on Wednesday, the 28th of February. And this sounds like a great event for people to come together and experience many technologies and maybe talk about things like AI.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's going to be the biggest showcase of assistive technology products for blind and partially sighted people in Northern Ireland. As you said, next Wednesday, 28th of February, 11 a.m. till 7 p.m. at the Ballroom at the Europa Hotel in Belfast. We're really excited about the event. There's going to be over 20 different stands from leading suppliers of assistive technology. So people can just try things out. They can get hands-on, speak to people about how they would use them. And as well as RNIB, we've got Optilec, Orcam, Dolphin, Sight and Sound, HumanWare, and more. But it's not just high tech, Toby, it's also low tech things just to help you around the house, you know, for everybody's favorite, the liquid level indicator. And so it promises to be a really brilliant day, loads of expertise, lots of people, and we just hope as many people as possible can make it.
Well, I hope they do. And if you would like to find out more about information and advice on living with sight loss, including technology and low vision, you can always visit the RNIB website, which is rnib.org.uk. You can call the RNIB helpline on 0303 123 9999 or use your Amazon smart device to call the RNIB helpline too. Well, thank you very much indeed, Louise, Aidan and David, for joining me today and sitting in for Matt this week.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.